It's Easter Sunday,
which
reminds me of that Philip Roth quotation about Irving Berlin, that he took the two major Goyish holidays and made them about snow and hats.
You know what I watched this morning? This is my DVD recommendation. I don't even know if it's on DVD or not, but I'm doing my DVD recommendation right now.
Right out the gate? Okay.
Right out the gate. I put in TiVo The Gospel Road.
No, I put in TiVo.
No, I put in TiVo. No, The Gospel Road.
I showed you it was coming on. And
you
I
make up so many you, lies. No, it's Easter, you know. You're not supposed to say lies on
you're
Easter.
You're taking credit for everything I do lately.
All right.
I put it in.
Anyway, may I continue
do.
With my DVD recommendation?
Please.
Which may or may not be.
I don't think it is on DVD.
It should be.
Okay.
Here's why. First, a little background about me. Biographical information that you may or may not know about me. I come from a broken home.
That's not funny, but it's funny when you say it.
And I don't just mean plain old divorce. I mean
chaos. You're the decathlon of broken homes.
I mean crazy.
Yeah.
So when I was like 9 years old, my parents got a divorce. My mom like ran away in the night from my dad. And so my oldest brother, my dad was a total alcoholic. And my oldest brother was playing basketball with these kids, but they were secretly born-againing him while they were playing basketball. Oh, who is calling me? I'm not answering this phone. Tom Ford. Ignore. So anyway. Wait.
Call from
Ford
Tom.
Ford Tom. It's going to stop like right now.
Yes.
There it goes. Okay. So anyway, so my brother gets born again and starts, and he's like 17. And he takes me and my little brother, to church.
Right.
Because my two oldest brothers are like way older than me, and me and my little brother, we're younger. Like we're two batches of kids. At two different spots.
The gentleman from the broken home is Dave White.
That's right.
Movies.com.
So anyway, so we start going to this church because, I mean, it's a place that's not crashing down around us. And
I'm Alonzo Duraldo,
I'm talking about The Gospel Road.
I just want people tuning in to know what they're listening to.
They show us this movie.
This is Linoleum Knife.
They show us this movie called The Gospel Road, like on 8mm or 16mm. It's like the most boring movie I've ever seen in my life. Because I'm only 9, but it is the single most boring movie I've ever seen.
Tell them who directed it.
I don't remember who directed it. I watched it this morning.
Didn't Johnny Cash direct it?
No.
Oh, no. But he has something to do with it, right?
Yeah, he's the dude in it. He's not Jesus, but he's basically...
He narrates.
He narrates, and actually, when Jesus' mouth is moving... It's Johnny saying all the words. So Johnny delivers the Sermon on the Mount, but I'll get to that in a second.
And doesn't June play like
Mary Magdalene? Magdalene? Yeah. It's fantastic. I didn't appreciate this when I was nine.
I wonder if Reese Witherspoon watched The Gospel Road.
She might have.
His research.
She might have. I didn't appreciate this film when I was 9, but I do now.
Yeah.
For all of its super craziness. So they show us this movie, and I'm like, when does something happen? When do the North Avenue Irregulars arrive? Because they could really liven this up. But seriously, this is like this weird sort of like, it's a combination of like, its influences are like the hippie Jesus Christ Superstar, Godspell-ish kind of stuff, you know, like, but for the now generation, man, because it's from like 1973 or two, this movie. But like weird also like 2001 sort of like things that happen, like camera rushing, you know, stuff. And like the long, slow weirdness of like some old, like Jodorowsky movie, like so many weird elements.
Any influence of Pasolini's Gospel According to St. Matthew? Perhaps?
None.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which they showed me at my church when I was a kid.
You see, you went to a much cooler church.
Well, I don't think they knew what they had on their hands. I think they were like, oh, Gospel According to St. Matthew. Like, I'm sure it wasn't like, oh, let's get another Pasolini film next week. This Sallow thing sounds interesting.
Right, exactly. You know? But so here's what's interesting about this movie. The guy who plays Jesus is, he doesn't say a word through the whole movie. Johnny Cash narrates the whole movie. They cut to Johnny a lot standing on this big rock.
Oh, really? Okay.
And he's in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And And he sings original songs, mm-hmm. including the title song, The Gospel Road.
Right.
And well, Jesus walked on the gospel highway and trod on the gospel road.
And took the gospel bypass.
The gospel muni.
To gospel the, 360. Yes. And then took a...
But, like, as Johnny is reading the Sermon on the Mount, it's like you see Jesus, like, just standing off all alone somewhere, like, on a hill. Like, he's supposed to be talking to people, but he's just sort of waving his arms in the air.
Blessed are the cheesemakers.
But then the camera goes off on this river and zooms up super fast. Like, it's the end of 2001, but the space is just coming at you. It's just like the water is just coming at you. And this is Johnny Cash reading the Sermon on the Mount while this water is, like, coming at your face.
Maybe he's baptizing the audience.
It's really cool. And so then
it's filmed in baptismo vision.
There's this other, you're doing what I do to you all the time.
How you like it?
It's stupid. It's funny when I do it.
Oh, really?
It's adorable when I do it.
Yeah, I'm better at it than you are.
But no.
You just can't, you can dish it out, but you can't take it.
Jesus is played by the blondest guy alive.
The big Swede, right?
He's like, if you dipped Dennis Wilson in buttermilk, not the terrible.
You mean the Beach Boy?
I mean the Beach Boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's in the Golden Turkey Awards as like nominee for worst Jesus.
Well, he's kind of a sexy Jesus, you know, because he's all blonde and you know, strides along in a white robe and
I'm sure he's no Jeffrey Hunter.
And June Carter is Mary Magdalene.
Right.
And it's just a weird. It's 80 minutes long. Mm-hmm. It felt like 3 hours when I was a kid. But it's kind of fascinating and cool. And there's tons of Johnny Cash. Like, he narrates the whole movie. And he sort of has this sort of grin. It's not a grin, but it's sort of like, hey, you know, I'm Johnny Cash. Won't you join me in going to heaven? You know, like, it's a very sort of like,
what were
those, you know, half what, smile that he's got on through the whole movie.
What were those,
I like this movie a lot now that I'm in my old age.
Okay, what were those thematic Johnny Cash albums that came out toward the end of his life that was like murder and...
I forget.
Remember those?
Like, yeah, I know. There were three of them.
One called Jesus?
No.
Oh, bummer.
No. But yeah, The Gospel Road.
I recommend. I don't know that it's on DVD, but I suspect it's the kind of thing that Fox Movie Channel will unearth every
year. There are chunks of it on YouTube, I know.
Oh, okay.
Because when it came up in TiVo, I went to YouTube and found an opening bit that I put on my page, on my wall. So everyone listening should go friend me on Facebook to see these things. And if you can't find a Dave White on Facebook, and why couldn't you really find a person named Dave White on Facebook? Go to movies.com.
No, find me.
Yeah, go to Alonzo Duralde, Alonzo with an S.
Alonzo Duralde.
Or better yet, go to movies.com and read my reviews and you'll find my Facebook link right there. But anyway, you'll see that stuff.
So now every Easter you can TiVo The Gospel Road.
No, I'm not going to watch it every year.
And I can TiVo.
I'm not gay for Godspell like
and
you
I'll
are.
And I'll TiVo Godspell.
You're weird.
Look, I'm an atheist, but those songs are catchy.
A couple of them are catchy. And the rest are annoying. And what's his face? As Jesus,
Victor Garber,
is kooky, and everyone in the movie
nobody
seems high.
Who could pull off that Jesus, the clown makeup Jesus with the suspenders?
Nobody, which is why it should have never been made.
Look, I hate hippies, and I have no regard for the Jesus. Those songs are the
stinkiest, dirty feetness looking people I have seen in a long time.
Oh no. Think about it though. Compared to real hippies, this was like the scrubbed up. All
right, you're right.
Version.
I don't even like those. The only hippies I like are the ones that are in Riot on Sunset Strip.
Those are some good ones.
Those are great hippies.
Those are good hippies. Yeah. Well, and what about And I Drink Your Blood?
Those are also great hippies because they have rabies.
Yes.
And they foam at the mouth and they eat people. I Drink Your Blood is also fantastic. Okay, so recommendations. Riot on Sunset Strip. Riot on Sunset Strip with Aldo Ray. I Drink Your Blood, which is like one of the best movies of all time. And The Gospel Road.
Yeah. Well, Joe Bob Briggs used to say
that... Eventually, we're going to get to start talking about this week's films.
Movies, yeah. Yes. Joe Bob Briggs used to say that the horror movies, I Eat Your Skin and I Drink Your Blood, were the Catholic double feature.
I Eat Your Skin is a fake out, though.
But they don't eat skin?
Well, they made it to be a double feature.
With I Drink Your
they
Blood?
They renamed it I Eat Your Skin just so they could put it on a double feature with I Drink Your Blood. Yeah.
So it's like how Troll 2 is actually about goblins.
All you need to see is I Drink Your Blood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. So much valuable information in this podcast. Okay, so yeah, new movies this week. There actually were some. Medea's big happy family.
So funny. I laughed my head off the whole movie.
I laughed a lot. And Tyler Perry tends to really annoy me. And the thing is, the stuff that annoys about Tyler Perry...
I could
feel
it when you were being annoyed.
...is still present in this movie.
I could totally feel it sitting next to you in the theater when you were getting
because
annoyed.
He is so reactionary. And like his movies are so much about how like women need to shut up and let their man tell them what to do and they'll be happier. Seriously. Like this is a plot point in almost every Tyler Perry movie.
Not all women. Just the bad ones.
Yeah, the ones who don't already like aren't Jesus-y enough for Tyler Perry's liking. Although the funny thing is that Medea isn't churchy,
Medea
but she is Jesus-y.
Medea is Tyler Perry's id.
Yeah.
Medea gets to smoke weed. Well, Medea used to smoke weed and carry guns.
Now she's a role model to children, so she doesn't smoke weed and
she
carries
a hammer in her purse. You got to regulate somehow.
I don't know that I would be feeling any better than a kid with a hammer in his hand.
If you can't have a gun, you just get a hammer. You got to regulate whatever way you can.
She'll hammer in the morning.
Yeah.
And she'll hammer in the evening.
Yeah.
But it's you know, I mean, it's funny because it's built around this sort of tragic story, sort of, because, you know, Loretta Devine has cancer.
I will tell you, though, this tragic story. Is the best tragic story that he has done because it's Loretta Devine and she's good. She's a good actress.
She is.
So even with sort of hokey, you know, mama's dying and family's got secrets.
I'm
going to
be with the Lord soon.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that kind of thing.
She pulls it off as well.
She
as
does
anybody
it real
could.
Well. Yeah. And so,
our real favorite character in the film is Tiana Taylor.
No, you don't know her name because she hasn't been in very many things at all, like two or three things, like tops. She's a staple on the site Bossip. Have you been to Bossip?
I've not heard of Bossip.
I've been to Bossip.
BOSSIP.
BOSSIP. Apparently, well, she hangs out with Chris Brown.
Oh.
All right.
And she kind of looks like Rihanna, so that's
she looks
weird.
Like, actually, she looks more like Kimberly Elise, but she looks like if Kimberly Elise and Rihanna made sweet love and had a baby.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, for a second, like when she first bought
you thought
on
it
screen,
was Kimberly
I thought
Elise.
It was Kimberly Elise, and then I thought, this girl's too young to be Kimberly Elise. Kimberly Elise is like in her 30s. Now, if you don't know who
Kimberly Elise
was is,
the mad black woman.
Yes. She was also in Beloved, the underrated Beloved.
Which I still haven't seen, but
you are
among its few champions,
Beloved.
But I trust you on that one.
She's great. Kimberly Elise is a great actress.
No,
and
I've seen her in other
girl,
stuff. She's terrific.
This new girl looks just like Kimberly Elise.
And she's hilarious.
She's the funniest dang thing in this whole movie.
She plays this awful, awful, awful woman who has had the baby of Bow Wow's character.
Yeah.
And
calling himself Shad Moss.
Yes.
That's his real name.
He's trying to go all Dwayne Johnson on us.
Right.
So every time, and his character's name is...
Ludacris did that too.
That's true.
Chris, it's not really
Chris
taking
Bridges.
With Ludacris though. People love calling him Ludacris because that's a great name.
It is.
Bow Wow's kind of a silly name.
Especially Ludacrismas. You know,
but Ludacris is a great name.
Anyway,
you should just keep
living. So Shad Bow Wow Moss plays a guy named Byron, and so every time the Tiana Taylor character Sabrina is nagging at him, she doesn't just say Byron, she says Byron, and I can't even do it.
Keep
right.
going.
I
no, do it for the entire length. That I mean, because it's like listening to a Tony Conrad movie.
Car alarm.
Where you. It's like the sound of like dissonant violins all mixed together.
I can't even. It goes on for like 20 seconds.
She whines and brays through this entire movie in the funniest damn way. The costume department has.
She's wearing the ridiculous outfits.
Tyler Perry said to the costume department, I swear, just go nuts. Just do whatever you want with her.
Banji girl.
Yeah. Like make it crazy. Make her crazy. And. Like, she steals every scene she's in, even the ones where Medea is in the scene with her. Yeah, and that's, like, that's something, because Medea dominates everything. When he's me and Medea.
Literally, the last chunk of the movie is basically Medea sitting everyone down and telling them what to do and how to live their life. Like, that's how the movie ends. She's like Johnny Cash in The Gospel Road.
I have to say that I've seen every Tyler Perry movie.
Yes.
And this is the best.
Of the ones I've seen, and I've seen a decent chunk. Yeah,
And there are some that are boring and bad.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that are crazy and bad, like For Colored Girls.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that are crazy, 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 crazy and bad. Like, Why Did I Get Married Too? Which you really need to go see after you watch The Gospel Road and I Eat Your and I Drink Your Blood and Ride on Sunset Strip. But this is in like as far as like did I laugh? And I laughed a lot at Madea Goes to Jail. But this is like this. I was cracking up the entire time.
Me too.
And I don't care what anybody thinks about that. And
granted, like the like I said, the stuff that I find reprehensible about Tyler Perry's worldview is still there, but I laughed anyway. So I kind of feel bad about it, but you know, I still laughed. So
I don't feel bad.
What the heck?
There is no guilty pleasure.
No, I don't mean guilty.
There is only pleasure.
I don't mean guilty like, oh, I'm embarrassed to say I liked it. I mean guilty like I feel bad that I'm supporting this because I find so much of it, you know, so antediluvian.
Just fancy man.
Oh, shut up.
Fancy man. Antediluvian. He said while drinking his tea.
I was going to say fancy boy. Now, what were you going to say?
I don't remember anymore.
You got distracted by my...
By your $5 words.
Vocabulary.
Yeah.
And of course, I love there are two white people in the movie that have no dialogue and are just sort of like generally kind of blank stared.
I don't remember
the guy, the people being shown the house.
Oh yeah, those were white folks.
The only white people in the movie.
There was a homeless guy in the movie that was also white, I think.
Maybe, I don't remember.
That might have been in the opening animated credits. Now that I think.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't. I don't. Yeah. You know what's interesting? Speaking of white and black, the audience, because they don't show these things. Tyler Perry does not show his movies to the press unless it's for Colored Girls, which they all thought was going to get him some kind of Oscar or something.
Yeah.
He
doesn't
does not show films to the critics because you know who needs them? No, you don't need critics. If you're Tyler Perry, you don't need the critics.
Yeah.
The audience, and having been to all of these films,
I noticed buying, that too. Actually,
having bought tickets to every one of them. The audience for this showing Friday morning, and that's always Friday morning, the first show that I go to when I go to a Tyler Perry movie,
was the most mixed,
the most racially diverse I have ever seen.
Yeah,
in it because it's usually
we're the only white
usually people. We're the only white people, but I mean like this is like everybody is.
Yeah,
and it was a half full theater at least, you know, not under attended.
Yeah,
So I thought that was kind of interesting too, that it was like.
However, it bears noting the Madea's opening bit, totally stolen from Falling Down.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Anyway.
It was an homage.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, but go.
And the opening bit is really funny.
But yeah, but go, you know.
Because that's where you meet Teyana Taylor.
If you've never seen a Tyler Perry movie and you just
go
see this one.
Yeah, yeah.
You might actually kind of enjoy it. Water for Elephants. Also a movie that I did not think I was going to like, and I did.
There are other elephant movies that I like better.
Dumbo.
And the Tony Jaa movie.
Oh, right,
was that The Protector? Is that the name of it?
Something like that. Do Not Mess with His Elephant.
Oh, man. If y'all don't know who Tony Jaa is, J-A-A is his last name, you need to go see, I think you need to go rent or check on Netflix or whatever. Is it The Protector? Look that up. You're the one with the laptop on right now.
Right.
I think it's The Protector is the name of it, but he has to guard these elephants. And kick everyone else in the face again and again and again and again. Tony Jaa kicks people in the face better than anyone who has ever lived. And I say this as already being a fan.
As a connoisseur of face kicking.
As a connoisseur of face kicking movies. This guy, first of all, you don't mess with his elephants.
It is The Protector, yes.
Yeah. Then you go see all the Ong Bak movies. O-N-G-B-A-K. Ong Bak will kick your face just while you're sitting there. Like, you will feel like your face has been kicked. Such good movies. He's the best.
Okay. What about, did you see the one with
but this movie's
the,
okay.
The Bill Murray elephant movie?
Yeah, I did.
Not good.
I'm sorry.
What about Operation Dumbo Drop?
I saw that too.
Not good.
Stupid.
Yeah, Billy Rose's Jumbo, not that good either.
Yeah. But so, this is not a terrible elephant movie.
Nope.
The elephant is my favorite thing in the movie. Yeah. She's the most, got the most expressive face of any elephant that I've ever seen.
Oh, I thought you meant of all the actors.
okay, not counting Robert Pattinson, whose job was, I believe, to just give Reese Witherspoon the hypnotizing love stare.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of all he does.
He does do that. I'll
all through
that.
The whole movie.
Not much else, though, unfortunately.
I would say that Christoph Waltz is as good as the elephant in this movie.
Yeah, okay.
He is as expressive as the elephant. In fact, he's the simmering Nazi that you liked so much in Inglourious Bastards, right. Only he's a ringmaster at a circus instead.
Yeah, but it's still every still time a he's on
screen.
Dictator.
Yeah, every time he's on screen, you think, "Is this it? Is this? Yeah, is this when he's going to bust? Yeah. Like, is this when he's going to start killing everybody? Because the minute he comes on screen, you're thinking, "Oh God, the Holocaust is coming! Like, there's well, it's going to be."
You wind up having the same battered wife syndrome that
you're like,
that,
"Don't hit me!"
That Reese Witherspoon does because you flinch because he's being charming. You're like, "Oh God, when's it going
to?" He's like smooth talking to you, and you think he's going to stab somebody just any minute now.
He's going to throw somebody off that train.
He's the bad guy. Yeah, he's the bad guy. He's mean to Reese Witherspoon. And
everyone else.
And everyone else. He pokes the elephant with a stick. It's gores the elephant.
Yeah, and he throws people off the train when he can't. Throws
people
to pay
off
them.
The train. Like if he wants to fire you, he just throws you off the train as it's moving, which equals you dead.
Yeah,
and
on the rocks.
But through it all, you know, like Robert Pattinson and Reese Witherspoon are sort of falling in love, and they.
I didn't think I was going to buy Reese Witherspoon as like a sort of circus lady with a trashy past because she's usually such a little blue nose on screen.
It's a little too well scrubbed to be the depression, I think. Like it's a little too pretty.
It's a little sun-dappled. I remember early on thinking, "Wow, this is like remember the
it's
Mice and
like
Men
that
movie,
Color Purple kind of poverty."
Well,
you know,
yeah. Remember the Mice and Men movie with John Malkovich, where it was like the depression by Ralph Lauren.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of that, but I was like, for this kind of movie, you know, even a movie then would have been that scrubbed up because this is a woman's picture.
All right,
you know,
sure.
I think.
My mom is going to love it. I did say that in my review. It's a mom movie.
It's romance under the big
top.
It's
for your mom.
You know? So, I just...
Or if you are a mom.
I mean,
you might enjoy this also.
I went in...
The Twilight girls are really going to love it.
I hope so, yeah. Because I went in not being particularly enthusiastic about it, and the fact that they didn't screen it until Wednesday, that's usually like the sign of doom for a studio.
But
I think it's just that Fox has no idea how to sell.
Or any studio,
or any
really.
Studio. Yeah, nobody knows how to sell movies that aren't aimed at the Comic-Con crowd anymore. So it's like I said, if you go to movies.com this week, I'm reviewing under Gray Drake's name. And I basically wrote that, you know, sorry, 15-year-old boys, you'll have to just settle for every other movie currently in release.
Yeah, basically.
Because this shockingly is not aimed at you. But yeah, no, I liked it. It's a little hokey, you know, but it's got a lot hokey, but you know, and I wasn't crazy about Pattinson's performance, but you know, it was nice to look at.
Cameron really likes that boy though. Like
he
holds the camera and it's all about like looking at him while he's being good looking and him looking back at the camera and reminding the camera how good looking he is, and then getting beaten up. He gets beaten up a lot in this movie. But even when he's beaten up,
he looks
really good. Yeah,
and there's a nice like framing device with Hal Holbrook and doing a flashback, and I enjoyed it.
I could have used a little more 30s Carney slang.
Yeah, they throw a little at you at the beginning, and you think you're going to pepper it throughout, but it's never brought up again.
Like somebody says, "She just got a hi-hat,
yeah." Yeah.
And boy, do I love hi-hat.
That's
a slang, because, you know, it means to be snubbed.
Yeah, I didn't even hear the word swell that much, which I think would have been good.
Right,
but not to mention rubes, you know, which is a great circus word.
Well, they say that a couple times.
Yeah, but they could say it much more.
Right, and so it's a 2011, 1931.
Basically.
Were they sort of like, they kind of fudge on the finer points of...
Yeah, they aren't... This isn't...
The olden times.
I bet the novel probably has more of that sort of thing. I've never read it.
Why don't you go read it? Because I'm not going to.
I'm not going to read it.
I'm not going to
read it. I've seen the movie.
You go read it.
I'm not going to... Neither of us has to read it. But it's not a great movie, but, you know, it doesn't suck. It was fun. I had a good time.
What's next?
Documentaries.
Oh, wait. Oh, that's right, because they are both documentaries.
Yes.
Sort of.
Well, yeah, as such. African Cats. Okay, here's the thing. There are two movies going on here. There is the movie that you see, which is extraordinary, gorgeous footage of these, you know, the pride of lions and a single cheetah mother and raising her cubs on her own. And these, you know, huge sort of giant kind of helicopter sweeping shots of the savannah, you know, and it's all gorgeous. And there's a real, there's an interesting narrative of, you know, this sort of cycle of their lives in terms of this one year. And, you know, the mother who's injured and wants to make sure that her daughter will be taken in by other people in the pride if the time comes that she can't keep up. There's the, you know, like, family of other lions that want to threaten the king of this particular pride that she's in. And then there's the cheetah mom with her kids. And that's all great.
It's like Dynasty with wild animals.
Yeah. And then there's the narration that they've written where they...
Which is not Sam Jackson's fault.
It's not Sam Jackson's fault, although, you know, there are times where it feels like he's just delivering it through clenched teeth. But it's so hokey and so, like... You know, all the characters, they give the cats names. Well,
Mara. Mara is the lady lion.
They don't give names.
Sita is the lady cheetah.
Sita the cheetah. They do not name the cheetah cubs for reasons that will become apparent as the film proceeds.
Lunch. But, four hyenas.
Not all of them, however. But yeah, but it, you know, and it's just, oh God, just, I mean, to
that
hear,
was a spoiler.
To hear, yeah, sorry. To hear Sam Jackson say, you know, what's the lion cub's name? Maya or Kaya?
Mara. Maya.
Maya thinks her dad is the best in the world. It's like, shut up. You know, so I...
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, so
my... And he doesn't give a damn about her.
Yeah, no.
That's the mom's job. Yeah. That's the mom lion's job. Exactly. His job is to walk around and preen and...
Basically,
like,
and
roar
guard,
at things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, and also, it's a Disney movie, and it's rated G, but if you have little kids...
and you want to torment them...
Think twice.
Have your little ones been bad?
Do you want to make your children cry without physically striking them?
If you want to punish, if you want to punish your little ones because they've been so bad lately.
Oh man!
Then you should take them to see African Cats because they will run screaming, blood curdling screams from the theater. It is exactly what happened during the press screening
twice.
Yeah, one to the same kid.
To the same kid. This little girl, like,
and you
can
tell
out.
The mom was there because she had to do it for work.
Yeah,
like,
she
mom
needed
was
to
there.
See the movie.
The mom had to see the movie for whatever her job is because it was like a small press screening on the Disney lot, and then this kid just is not cooperating.
No,
at all.
She leaves once. The mom goes out after her. They manage to get her back into the theater again, and then she freaks out again when something else happens. I mean, this is like,
well, because the lions are eating a zebra that's yeah. still half alive and
with blood on their faces,
blood all over their faces. It's like
4-year-olds are not down.
It is basically the "I drink your blood" of documentaries,
of animal
aimed
documentaries
aimed at children.
Yeah. You know, and there's a scene where the cheetah chases down a gazelle, which is, again, extraordinarily shot and sort of slowed down. You can really
right.
sort of see the cheetah doing all the running stuff.
Right.
Of course, and then they conveniently cut away from the next part, but it's kind of obvious.
My
you
favorite
know?
Thing my favorite thing about this movie is when somebody is old and the pack leaves them behind.
Oh, yeah.
To die. Or if a baby something gets eaten or whatever. It's all like... Her cubs were never seen again. Or, she will not be coming back. Stuff like that. That's what I like. Now, overall, this movie would have been a hell of a lot better if Randall had not narrated it and written the narration.
Go to YouTube and look up Honey Badger.
Randall. He's great. I don't know who that dude is, but I'm his friend.
It would have been, yeah, it really, or just no narration at all. Like just the bare bones, like, you know, this cub is going to, you know, the mother worries about her cub's place in the pride if she can't keep up with them. You
I
know,
mean, they got Sigourney Weaver to narrate Planet Earth, you know,
right.
America. Why can't, and they got someone decent to write it.
Well, yes, again,
so
not Sam Jackson's fault
it's
necessarily.
All about,
it's
like,
the writing is
the writing
hokey.
Is just terrible. And somebody... said yes to this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so just wait for it to be on cable or whatever and then watch
mute
it.
Mute it.
Watch it with the sound off. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, go to YouTube and check out. Everyone's seen Honey Badger. Everybody has seen it by now, right?
You never know.
I mean, it's been on Glee now.
I know.
Everyone knows what the Honey Badger is
okay.
now.
Look,
but yeah.
I
but Randall has all these other videos, animal narration videos. My favorite one is the zebras, because all he does through the whole thing, and I'm going to try to approximate his voice, although I'm not going to be very good at it. He's like, oh, look, the zebras are so beautiful. Look at, oh, you lovely zebras. And then they turn away and they walk away, and he's like, bye, zebras, you're so pretty. You know, like, it's like that.
Yeah,
he's awesome. He is awesome.
His African Cats would have been pretty amazing. All right, and then that leaves us with Palm Wonderful Palm presents Wonderful. The greatest movie ever sold.
I
you liked it more than I did.
I thought it was fine. I think that he's a good. I think he would make a really good sociology teacher in high school because he would teach you about how to look at the world.
Right.
Like he would teach you or history. History teacher, sociology teacher. You know, a little both, whatever. He'd make a good high school teacher because he would engage you in a very easy way. He's got this really, he's got a style that Michael Moore doesn't
have. Morgan Spurlock is very charismatic. He's very good at these sort of first person.
He's got that sort of weird type bros. Like that's his whole
thing.
And like
Christy Lemire said, it's more the thing where like Michael Moore is here to tell you stuff. And with Morgan Spurlock, it's more like, hey, let's discover this together.
Let's talk. Let's explore science.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, and I mean, you know, he's a nice guy. I met him once. You know, we spent 2 days together doing that.
That sounds weird.
That not like that.
Morgan and I spent two lovely days.
No. We were it was work. we were covering red carpet stuff.
Was he covering last
year? Yeah, he was. It was me.
It was you,
him, and Tabitha.
Tabitha from Tabitha's salon makeover. Yeah,
and Steve. I'm blanking on his name, party planner guy from Dallas, who's also real nice. But anyway, Morgan's he's charismatic and his movies are fun. But like, whereas Super Size Me, you know, the gimmick, the hook was the I'm going to eat McDonald's 3 meals a day for 30 days, which that was funny. But then he used in the course of making the movie, it's like in addition to doing that, hey, let's talk about nutrition in schools. Let's talk about how food is prepared.
And he does do a little bit of that. Like he goes to talk to Ralph Nader. Yeah. He goes to talk to Noam Chomsky.
Right.
But they don't get but like a minute each.
Yeah, he doesn't. There's not nearly enough of that in this movie. The greatest movie ever sold is basically Morgan Spurlock schlepping around to all these different companies and getting them to pay to be in this movie. So you're watching a making of itself, but then when it's over, you're like, well, when does the movie start? At least I was.
It's like, still kind of interesting. I learned things while watching it, though. I learned that I need to understand what my brand collateral is. And I don't even know what that means. I need to understand what my brand personality is also.
I'll tell you what your
brand is. I don't know what my brand personality
is. Your brand personality is a dick.
I think
when
I'm sweet.
When you're interrupting me.
I think I'm great. My brand personality is that I'm great.
I like things that are great.
I like things that are great. Also, that to hook people, you need to grab them with fear, with craving, and sex.
Mm.
So that's my goal now. In every interpersonal interaction for the rest of my life.
Is that how you're going to sell this podcast?
Is yes. Fear, craving, and sex.
Okay.
But like from now on, when I go out to a store or whatever and I need to get something, I'm just going to instill fear and craving and sex into the salesperson. And they're going to give me what I want. They might even let me take it home for free.
Good luck with that.
That's going to be my new thing. Well, apparently it works because they will sell you all kinds of stupid stuff. If they appeal to your fears and your cravings and your sexy needs.
That's how they get people to buy stuff. It's not how you get people to give you things.
I think it can also work with getting people to give you things. I think you can mind trick people with all these things. So once I figure out my brand, what brand collateral is, that's the first thing. And then I have to get a brand personality. And then I have to make people afraid of me. And then I have to make them crave.
Done and done.
Then I have to make them crave me. And then I have to, sex them somehow. With my mind.
Good luck with that.
Or my magnetic personality. Yeah. Uh-huh. Easy.
Great. Well, I'm glad you got something out of this movie because I didn't feel like I learned anything about product placement except that it exists and I sort of knew that.
My favorite movie with product placement, which is sort of related to this, is Torque.
Yes.
T-O-R-Q-U-E. Yes. Torque with Ice Cube. And
it is not a biopic about
the and whatever else, whoever else is in this movie.
Isn't Adam Scott in Torque?
Yes, he is. Yeah. Torque is a great movie.
You love Torque.
I love Torque. And Torque is a hilariously like ridiculous product placement
film. Yeah, they're like the giant movie. Soda brands filling the
screen. During a motorcycle battle. It's, they're perfectly, framed within this motorcycle battle at the end with these two chicks. And
My favorite product placement movie, which will be my DVD pick of the week, Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats, much like, well, even more so than Beloved, is a totally underrated movie.
Yes. And totally goofs on the idea of product placement by indulging in it, which people at the time didn't get and just thought they were just doing it.
I've seen it like three times.
It's a great movie.
That's how I saw it in the theater at the press screening, and then like a couple more times on cable.
I still listen to the soundtrack.
And, if I accidentally happen upon it on TV, I kind of sit down and watch the rest.
And
of it.
I think as a satire, it has really sharp things to say about like selling to selling youth culture and all kinds of
stuff. And it's got Tara Reid, who is one of my favorite people.
Bless.
I wish that Paradise was still on, because I would be watching that every week.
Another good product placement movie, well, actually, it's a terrible movie, but it's got some blatant product placement in it. You know, you talk about how there's that Nike ad in the middle of What Women Want.
Terrible.
There's an Adidas ad in the middle of Johnny B. Goode.
Really?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
Where he goes, at some point, he's like visiting Vince McMahon on the set of the Adidas commercial, and then you get the Adidas commercial, the whole thing.
Like in the middle of the movie or at the end?
Yeah, in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, because that's what happens in What Women Want. Helen Hunt plays an ad exec, and she's doing a Nike campaign,
right?
And she shows the Nike commercial that her company has made to, I guess, to the clients or to Mel Gibson or whoever it is. And you see the entire ad,
right?
And before, as she's preparing to make the ad, she walks around the movie talking and saying things like, "Nike really wants to empower women." That's in the dialogue. That's not something that happens in the commercial. That's something that happens
out of Helen Hunt's
mouth. Comes out of Helen Hunt's mouth in the course of normal dialogue about her job. It's insane.
The movie I like about advertising is Nothing in Common, but at least the brands are fake. So, you know, you see a commercial get made, but you're not being sold a real thing.
Like
so.
Kreb.
Exactly. It's a fake airline that they're doing an ad for the whole time. Like
Kreb. Is it Kreb?
Kreb Star.
Kreb Star of Pete and Pete.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great
thing. It's not that fake, but yeah. It's not like they did a real airline. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, we are wrapping it up.
We're done. I got to go make breakfast.
Okay. So I just wanted to, if you are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the USA Film Festival happens this week.
It
kicks off on Wednesday and runs through Sunday. It's an awesome event. They've got lots of really fun guests this year. They're doing tributes to Malcolm McDowell and Barry Corbin and one of my favorite character actors, William Fichtner. All of which should be real interesting, and lots of other great stuff. So check it out. It's usafilmfestival.com. You can get a complete schedule. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
And
you can visit our Twitter feed at linoleumcast at twitter.com.
I've been much better at Twittering than you have on linoleumcast at Twitter. Good I still you. Don't Twitter enough.
I know. We both
I go days, and then I think, oh, yeah, I got to put something on Twitter.
I should pick up
a You know what I need to do? I need to watch. We just got Jean Dielman in on TCM.
Yeah,
and it's in TiVo. I need to Twitter my way through Jean Dielman as linoleumcast.
That's like 3+ hours.
Yeah, sure.
Where are you going to find the time to do that?
I don't know.
I'll believe it when I see it.
I declare today that I will live tweet when I sit down and watch Jean Dielman.
Well, pick a time and start and promote it. That's for your brand collateral. Like a couple days in advance, tell people that's going to be happening so they'll know.
I don't know when I'm going to do this yet.
And then you'll need to do like
It may take a while for me to get to this.
But when you do it, and then you'll also need to do like a Jean Dielman.
I'm teasering you right now.
You'll need to do a Jean Dielman hashtag so that people can follow it.
Yes.
Or 23 K or something shorter,
right.
You know.
If you're right.
Okay, well, that's something to look forward to, Dave White. that's Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. Thank you for joining us. Check out the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, the Popcorn Mafia with Greg Drake, and Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram. And he is hoping that you'll go to Kickstarter and support his new documentary about the metal bands.
Yeah.
And thanks to Sassy Cast for the promotion.
Yes.
We will see you kids next week.
Yes.